Chapter 3. After the War of 1812, American sovereignty on the high seas was assured through the presence of a strong navy. American whalers expanded their hunting grounds into the North and South Pacific, the Indian Ocean, and eventually into the Sea of Okhotsk and the Western Arctic. New Bedford whalers first rounded Cape Horn into the Pacific in the 1790s, reached Hawaii in 1819, and penetrated the Bering Strait into the Western Arctic Ocean in 1848. The economics of longer distances and the volume of catch required for profitability resulted in larger vessels and crews, making voyages of 2, 3, or even 4 years' duration. High risk, spectacular potential profits, and family investment, combined with some significant technical innovations, were typical of the industry. New Bedford entrepreneurs were traditionally averse to formal corporate structure, preferring individuals to risk their investments across a number of voyages. In addition to this novel method of sharing risk, whaling was the first global industry based in the United States that required a complex web of financing, communication, management, insurance, and other business structures to become truly profitable. This business acumen, when combined with great experience in all of the specialized crafts necessary to outfit and complete a voyage successfully, virtually assured that New Bedford would rise to preeminence among whaling ports. A range of shoreside industries enabled this success: shipbuilding, boat building, cooperage, sailmaking, shipsmithing, outfitting, provisioning, cordage manufacturing, spar making, pump and block making, ironmongering, flour milling, oil refinery, and spermaceti candle manufacturing. Ancillary enterprises included brokerages, recruiting agents, boarding houses, hotels, theaters, bakeries, tailors, commission merchants, cargo handling, and transport. The entire community was laid out for whaling. The 1840s and 1850s saw the American whaling industry at its peak, far ahead in productivity, profitability, and critical mass than what any other whaling nation had been able to achieve. By 1843, more than 700 vessels sailed annually from 40 ports, from New Hampshire to New Jersey, taking about 10,000 whales each year. Whaling had become the nation's ninth largest industry, and, for the industrial and manufacturing growth of the young nation, certainly one of its most indispensable. Apart from their value as the source for household lighting, the oils produced lubricated the machinery of industry and enabled lighthouses to guide the fleets of the maritime nation. Between 1804 and 1876, the American whaling industry cumulatively introduced more than $330 million into the economy, which is over $88 billion today. This makes it one of the early republic's most vital engines for capital creation. By 1857, New Bedford's fleet numbered 329 vessels, amounting to 64% of the total American whaling tonnage and nearly 60% of the value of the American catch. At least half of all whaling worldwide was conducted from the New Bedford Customs District. Virtually every state in the country contributed labor and crew for the New Bedford vessels. In spite of the city's small size, just over 20,000 residents in 1855, it was one of the country's most prosperous communities. Having surpassed Nantucket in power, wealth, and volume by the 1820s, the community emerged as a cosmopolitan center of industry, trade, and culture, with the highest per capita income in the country. While there have always been substitutes for whale oil, the discovery of petroleum rock oil in Titusville, Pennsylvania in 1859 seemed a death knell for New Bedford whalers. However, the whalers' pursuit persisted in part due to fashion demands that required baleen. Baleen is a keratin material found in the mouth of mysticetes, so-called baleen whales, including right, blue, and finback whales, in the place of teeth. Strong, pliable, and sinewy, baleen was used commercially for corset stays, umbrella ribs, and skirt hoops until the discovery of spring steel in the 1890s and then plastics in the 20th century. When the new rail connection, financed largely by whaling profits, was completed between New Bedford, Providence, and Boston in 1840, Direct access to markets, resources, and personnel gave New Bedford an even greater commercial advantage. Later, in the 19th and 20th centuries, the railroad would prove tremendously advantageous as other industries grew up. As a result, the whaling industry, as it developed in New Bedford, serves as a prime example of a successful American business model founded upon expertise and reliant upon specialized products with an international market. Chapter 3, Profile of Jonathan Bourne, Jr. Jonathan Bourne, Jr., 1811 to 1889, was one of New Bedford's most prosperous whaling agents and merchants. The 10th of 11 children, he was raised on a small farm in the western part of Sandwich, Massachusetts. He moved to New Bedford at the age of 17 in search of wealth. By age 24, he had married into the Nye Howland family and began investing in whale ships, devoting his full attention to the venture by age 27. In 1841, he purchased a merchant vessel, the ship Lagoda, and had her converted to a whaler. She went on to become the single most lucrative whaling vessel in New Bedford's history. Bourne ultimately acted as agent for 24 vessels and owned stock in 22 others. As agent, he managed every aspect of a ship's voyage, decided the companies that outfitted her, hired every crew member, haggled over wages, and determined where the ship would sail. Bourne also diversified over time, investing in the Gosnell, Hathaway, Bourne, and Acushnet Mills. He became director of all the mills and president of the Bourne Mill. Similarly, he directed the Union Street Railway Company, the Western Railroad, and the New Bedford, Vineyard, and Nantucket Steamboat Company. He was instrumental in the election of Abraham Lincoln and helped his village in Sandwich achieve township. The town of Bourne was named in honor of him. He served in the Massachusetts Governor's Council for several years, never missing a meeting in his lifetime. His daughter Emily commissioned the construction of the Bourne Building and a Lagoda half-scale model in 1915. Completed in 1916, they commemorated Bourne's involvement in New Bedford's greatest industry. Chapter 3, Profile of Lewis Temple. Blacksmith Lewis Temple, 1800 to 1854, was born in Richmond, Virginia, and never learned to write his name. Little is known about his youth, whether he started as a free man or a slave, how he learned his trade, or even how he came north. He arrived in New Bedford in the late 1820s as a free black man and married Mary Clark in 1829. They would have three children. By the mid-1830s, he was pursuing his blacksmith trade and by 1836 owned his own shop. It was there that he invented, in 1848, a harpoon tip that toggled open. Simple in design, it had a movable head that caught in the whale's blubber after insertion. Many attempts to improve the holding power of harpoons had been made, but few worked efficiently. It was common for whalers to successfully strike a whale, only to lose it by the harpoon pulling free. Temple's toggle iron greatly improved the success rate of the American hunt. By the 1850s, blacksmiths all over New Bedford were replicating these Temple toggle irons. Lewis Temple worked in the whaling capital of the world through its greatest period of success, but because he never applied for a patent for his toggling harpoon invention, it was freely copied. It eventually evolved into the improved toggle, a harpoon type with a cast head that made it easier to mass produce. The standard improved toggle remained the harpoon of choice in the American whale fishery until its end in the 1920s. In 1854, at the age of 54, Temple died a poor man from injuries he sustained in a fall near the construction site of what was to be his new blacksmith shop.